Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Yud Gimel Amud Bet by the new Perek. The Perek now is going to speak about something within Arachim, and then it's going to use that genre of typology then to explain other things in Halacha. And again, we're going to have a series of Mishnayot that are not necessarily connected to Arachim, but have the same pattern, and we're going to then discover or discuss them throughout the Perek, similar to what we did in the previous Perek. And that is Yesh Barachim Hakel Ulachmir. Arachin turned out to be sometimes the kula, sometimes the chumra. Ubsteachuza. Similarly, with regards to a steachuza, you have lahachel ulahachmir. Steachuza is a piece of property that the in-person inherits. Ubishor hamuad shehemit ha'eved. And a shomuad that kills an eved kanani is gamken lahachel ulahachmir. Beunes, umifateh, rape and seduction. Ubumotzi shemra. And the situation where he claims that she was not a betula, all of these cases are the hakel u'lahachmir. The common denominator between all of these cases is that they have a fixed payment or a fixed knas associated with them, and that's why it makes them sometimes the hakel and sometimes the hachmir. Our Mishnah will explicate on the aspect of arachin, and then the subsequent Mishnayot will discuss the other matters that were mentioned in the Mishnah, and that is arachin, the hakel u'lahachmir keitzad. When it comes to arachin, whether it's lahakel lahachmir, what is the situation, what is the case? Echad she'erich et hana'ah should be Israel. Whether you are ma'arich, the most beautiful or the highest class citizen of Israel, ve'et ha'kior should be Israel, or the most lowly, ugly, the lowest status individual in Israel, notein chamishim sela, if the individual is between the ages of 20 and 60, then you pay the fixed payment of 50 sela. Ve'amar hare damav alai. Other hand, if he said that he's going to pay for the value of the individual, notein et shovyo, then he has to pay his value. So arachin have a fixed amount for the individual, no matter what the individual is. And had you said damav or damim, then you would fluctuate with the true value of the individual. But the arachin is only determined by gender and age, nothing else. And that's what it means, lahakel lahachmir. Sometimes the person's worth more than that 50 sela, yet you only pay 50 sela, that's the hakel. And sometimes he's worth less than 50 sela, and you still have to pay 50 sela, and that's the hachmir. Now the Gemara says, Yesh barachin hakel lachmir, keitzad echad sheerich, b'Yisrael in, ba'ovei kuchavim, lo. Seems from right here that the object of the neder arachin over here can only be Israel, not a non-Jew. Let's say our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Meir, who we saw earlier on in the Masechta with regards to Machloket, with the Novi Kochavim. What part of Arachim is he included in? What is he excluded in? And Rabbi Meir's opinion was, it's non, Ovei Kochavim. Rabbi Meir Omer, Ne'erach, he is subject to Arachim, Avalo Marich, but he can't make another Arachim. Over here, in the Mishnah, the example that it gives is, the highest person in Israel and the lowest person in Israel seems to give the example of the object of the neder arachin to be someone from Israel to the exclusion of a goy. And then that would not be like Rabbi Meir, who says that a goy could also be nerach. Gemara says, afilu teima Rabbi Meir, even if you say it's Rabbi Meir, hu adin dafilu ovid kochavim nami, the Mishnah could have given the example of an ovid kochavim, ela milta gav orche kamash malan. But the Mishnah is teaching us something by matter of fact, or by an ancillary item to the core halacha of the Mishnah, which is Kid Rav Yehuda Amarav. The Amarav Yehuda Amarav, we saw this in Avodah Zarah Daf Chaf, with regards to the multiple drashot that the Gemara there has with regards to the pasuk of Lo Techanem. And there, Rav Yehuda Amarav says, Asur Adam Shomar Kama Na'ek Nanizeh. Person can't speak about the beauty, or how wonderful, or how good is this particular Kanani. And that is, lo techanem, lo titen lahem chein, that you should not give them favor or be complimentary towards them. You know how to be complimentary or give praise towards the Kanani. And that's why the Mishnah doesn't include the Kanani or the non-Jew in the Mishnah, because you're speaking about hana'eh, the most valuable or the highest level. And then you would have to put or associate na'eh with the goy, and that would be inappropriate. And that's the sidebar that it teaches you from only mentioning the Israel, even though it could have mentioned the Goy. So the Gemara says, well, we could still learn that information, but simply make a slightly different phrasing of the Mishnah. Ve'litnei et ha'na'ah should be Israel, ve'et ha'kior should be Kanani. just make the upper level or the upper echelon the most beautiful or the best or the highest status amongst Klal Yisrael, and the lowest status associate that with the Kanani, and therefore you'd capture both of them, but you wouldn't be complementing the Kanani. You could learn both Dinim, and yet you'd still mention Kanani, which would be a more favorable way for Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah, because then it would mention a Kanani as well as being the object of the Neder Arachin. The Gemara says, "B'chad Uma Kamayri, Betray Uma Lo Mayri." It's trying to give you a contrast within a single grouping or a single nation like Israel. It's not trying to contrast two different nations and two different individuals within those nations. That's just too many factors. We're trying to freeze all the factors except the one factor that higher status, lower status. Over here, if you start entering in also Israel and Kanani, that's not what we're going to do, or that's not the nature of the Mishnah. Where it says velo, is that really true? The subsequent Mishnayot, in giving an example of differences, is going to say the highest level or the person that's a person from the Kuna and the smallest person from Klal Yisrael. So over there, you're also dealing within the Ummah of Klal Yisrael, but then you're differentiating between subcategories in Yisrael, of Kahuna and Yisrael. Where it says, Hotam Chadumahu Ela Makdishu de Kadishi Kohanim Tvei. Exactly how we phrased it, which is you're dealing with a subcategory within a single category. It's not that Kohanim and Yisraelim are different, because Kohanim are higher level because of the Kedusha that's associated with them. So it's a subcategory that is not something that makes them distinct from the Israelim, it just makes them a higher level or more kadosh than the Israelim. And that's fine, because that's exactly what we're trying to demonstrate here, is someone on a high level, someone on a low level within a single ummah, and Kohen versus Israel does exactly that. V'baitema, another possibility is, I.D., the Kobay, the Mitne Seifa, because the Mishnah is also going to have to discuss Steachuza and be Israel, who, the Mishkachadah, Bo'ove Kochavim, Lo Mishkachadah. So when it comes to Steachuza, you can't include Kanani. So to keep consistency within the Perek, if we're discussing Israel in the first Mishnah, then we can also discuss Israel in the second Mishnah. You start discussing a Kanani in the first Mishnah, the second Mishnah that's talking about a Steachuza is not going to be able to speak about a Kanani, and then you get this lack of parallel within the Mishnayot, and so to keep it consistent, it only spoke about Israel. And that is because by Ovei Kochavim, Lo mishkachat la delav b'nei achuza ninhu, because they don't have a din of achuza. Shum hachiktani la b'Yisrael. Therefore, it placed it or spoke about it with Israel. What does that mean that a ktani does not have an achuza? The Rabbeinu Gershom has the most kitzoni, far-reaching and extreme position over here. So extreme that you can look at the notes at the bottom that he's suspicious of the fact that it's not true, or that the Gemara in other places seems to indicate otherwise. And that is, he writes over here, Dovei Kochavim, Lo Kani Sadeh, he does not acquire a field, Ve'od, She'ein Lo, She'er Av, he does not have relationships with his father, or a relationship or connection to his father, Ve'ein Yoresh Et Aviv, and he does not inherit his father. All of those are controversial statements, because first of all, why can't an Kanani or a non-Jew acquire property? So you can see that the notes over there amend that to say he can't acquire in Eretz Israel, which would be maybe according to the one who says that Ein Kinyan Ovi Kochavim Tafkiya Kedushat Haaretz. Maybe that's what he's referencing to. It's not clear. The fact that he does not have Shira Av is also strange, because we know the Gabe Arayot, by other things, there is relationship between a child and a father. And the final statement is the most controversial, which is, Ben Yoresh Et Aviv. He does not inherit his father. We have a Gemara in Kiddushin that explicitly says otherwise, that he does inherit his father. But here, the Rabbeinu Gershom gives all three of those as being the reason that he doesn't have a Steachuza or a din of Steachuza in Eretz Yisrael. Whereas if you look in Rashi and the Balei HaTosafot, they give a much narrower explanation of it and say, Rashi says over here, din Steachuza, she'e odeyu b'chamishim shekel kesef, ele b'shovyo, Rashi just limits it to the fact that they don't have the ability to have a status of Achuza in Eretz Yisrael, because Tosafot says it's a mitzvah hatluya baretz. Doesn't have any inheritance in the land. That's because the Torah specifically states there's a value to stay Achuza, which we're going to see in a second in the next Mishnah, that's fixed in terms of redemption of Hekdesh, and stay Achuza is as Tosfot says here, a mitzvah tuya the baretz. Rashi simply just says that not about mitzvah tuya baretz, but it's a situation in which the Kohen doesn't have the capacity to create achuzah in Eretz Yisrael. And so because of that, he's not relevant by the world of stay achuzah. If that's the case, in the subsequent Mishnah, which we're about to read, you couldn't have mentioned Kanani. That's why it doesn't mention Kanani in the first Mishnah, because it can't mention it in the second Mishnah. But not to tell you that Rabbi Meir is wrong, because even this Mishnah would agree that a goy could be Nerach, just doesn't mention it for technical reasons. Now the next Mishnah takes on the next statement of our previous Mishnah, which was B'stei Achuzah, La'kel L'achmir Ketzad. When it comes to B'stei Achuzah, how is it La'kel L'achmir? What's the situation? Echad HaMakdish B'cholat HaMechuz, whether one is Makdish. Now Rashi over here gives two explanations, the first of which is, Mecholat means machol. Machol means a circle or to encircle. And machouz means a city. And so Rashi says that's the meaning over here, which is the fields that are around the city. So the fields around the city are not so valuable. Rashi says here because of midras haraglaim, because people walk over there. And since they traverse those areas, they end up trampling those fields or walking through those fields. And that's why they're not worth so much. Rabbeinu Gershom gives that reason as well. He says, "Hainu sadeh smucha lemechozeir she dorchim ota b'nei adam." It's a field that's close to the city where it gets a lot of foot traffic and people walk over it. Ve'od kevan she smucha leir, since it's so close to the city, v'omedet b'kamata, and then when the field is in its fully ripened state and all the stalks are there, roim ota b'nei adam. Many people see it, and therefore they give it an ayin hara, and that reduces the production of that field, or that field will not have such great production capacity, both because of the physical trampling of the field, as well as the fact that people are there all the time, so it gives it an ayin hara. That's one explanation. Rashi begins it. We saw more detail of that in the Rabbeinu Gershom. Rashi then brings a second explanation, which is becholat hamachoz, that Mechoz is the name of a city, and it's a city that doesn't have great fields. Likely, they don't have great fields because it's Mecholat, because the fields or the earth there is made out of sand, and therefore they're not very worthwhile to plant. And you can see in the Shita Mekubetet Odali, he brings something along those lines, which is Perish Medina Tuchol. It's an area or a nation, a place that's all sand. And it's not an area that's productive or fertile to produce any produce. And therefore, the land there is obviously not so valuable. Or these are fields along the coast where there's a lot of sand, and therefore they're not very productive. So that's the one side of this. And the same thing is true of a person who's makdish a field in Sebastia or Sebastian, which is a city in the Shomron that was built in the time of Herod. And it was a both beautiful and massive city. And the fields there were expensive. Plots of land were expensive and they were productive. In that case, no matter whether he's got the lowest field, the least productive field, or the highest or best property in the country, either way, if he's makdishit, notein zera chumer seorim b'chamishim shekel kesef. The Torah lays out the value of such a field that you pay 50 shekel for every square area that has the capacity to produce a chomer of se'orim. So that's the case by estei achuzah. Aval b'estei mikneh notein et shovyo. When it comes to a property that you purchase from someone that is not your inherited property, but property that you bought and then were makdish, and now you want to redeem it, you have to redeem it at its full value. You don't get this dispensation to use a fixed amount. So that's the difference between estei achuzah and estei mikneh. That's also what gives you the effect of the Stei Achuzah being the Hakel L'Achmir. It's the Hakel when you're talking about the best fields of Sebastia, and it's L'Achmir when you're talking about the fields of Mecholat HaMechuz. Rabbi Eliezer disagrees fundamentally with this distinction and says, Omer, Echad Stei HaMekneh V'Echad Stei Achuzah, doesn't matter whether it's a purchased field, I mean, it's not an inherited field, you bought it from someone, which really in the time of the Yovel means you leased it from them until the Yovel, or whether it's a stei achuzah, it's your inherited property. Either case, when you're makdish them, you are podeh them at that fixed value. He thinks that the fixed value applies to both types of field. But then, ma ben sadeh achuzah, the stei mikneh. So then, if that's the case, stei mikneh, why would there be, what is the difference? Or how would you explain the difference between these two types of fields? If both of these fields have the same rule, why does the Torah in Parashat Bechukotai separate their din? If the owner of the field redeems it, he adds on an additional fifth. That's written in the Torah. We'll see these psukim in a bit. But when it comes to a field that is purchased, there he doesn't add on a chomesh. The Balya Tosafot on the previous Amud also point out that there are other differences between a stei achuzah and a stei mikneh. But the Gemara over here does not use those examples, because Tosafot suggests over here that those are connected to differences that don't deal with the person themselves who's redeeming the field or the owner that's redeeming the field. So the Mishnah is only dealing with that aspect of the person who redeems the field rather than the total din of the stei achuzah, the stei mikneh, because there you could come up with other differences as well. There's another Gemara that says, Amar Rav Huna, Higdish stade lea ilanot. Person's makdish a field full of trees. Kzupodan pode ilanot bishovyan. He goes to redeem the field. He first of all segregates out the trees and redeems them at their full value. And then for the land itself, he redeems that at the fixed rate that the Torah prescribes for a stei achuzah. Alma kasava Rav Huna. From this you would conclude that Rav Huna believes Adam Makdish Ba'an Yafeh Makdish. When a person is Makdish, he does it in the most generous manner. That means that we're going to assume when he's makdish over here, he's makdish both the trees and the field, and then he's makdish the trees in a separate hakdashah that requires then a full redemption, and they're not covered under the zera chomer sorim b'chamishim shekel kesef. Etevei, Rav Nachman, the Rav Huna. So now Rav Nachman challenges Rav Huna's view from our Mishnah. Echad ha-makdish b'cholat ha-mechuz. V'chad ha-makdish b'pardesot sabasti. Nutain Beit Zera Chomer Se'urim B'chamishim Shekel Kesef. So there it sounds like from our Mishnah that it doesn't really matter what you are being makdish, no matter what it is, you redeem it at that value. The example that's given for the best field is a pardes in Sebastia, which sounds like an orchard in Sebastia, which must be full of trees or fruit trees. That's why it's called an orchard. Samalei Re'uya the pardesot kamina. Mishnah doesn't mean literally an orchard full of trees in it. It just means land that is ra'oi to have an orchard in it. And that property, which is obviously worth a lot more than the mecholat machos, would still be redeemed at that flat value. But not because necessarily there are trees here and we ignore the trees. The Gemara brings, Eitave, Beit Zera, Enliala Beit Zera, Ustei Gefanim, Ustei Kanim, Ustei Lenot, Minayin. From the Torah, it sounds like this is applicable only to a field that plants grains, and therefore this is the redemptive price for the grain-producing fields. How do I know that if it's a field that is made for vines, I mean it's a vineyard, or it's a field that's used for reeds, or it's an orchard, how do I know, minayin, how do I know that's also included in this din? Tamalomar, sadeh, mikol makom. The word sadeh in the pasuk tells you that no matter what it is, you redeem it. Meaning that the extra word sadeh tells you v'imistei achuzato yagdish ish l'Hashem v'yarkecha lefi zaro zera chomer sorim b'chamishim shakol kesef. That word sadeh tells you that any type of sadeh that's a stei achuzah is subject to this rule. So you see over here once again that you have a stei gefanim and stei ilanot, and obviously over here we're not speaking about a field that is ra'ui for that, because it's calling it a stei gefanim and stei ilanot, as opposed to the Beit Zera. So it's clear that it's a differentiated property because of the fact that something else is planted there. So that sounds like you have to redeem that just at the fixed value, and you don't redeem the trees separately. Amalei hachanami, podeh v'chozeru podeh. All it says over there is that they're included in the pasuk. It doesn't tell you what the prescribed result of that is. And I'm telling you what that means is, if it is a field like that, yes, the karka, the land itself, will be redeemed at that value. But you still have to redeem the trees separately. Eitavei. So another question. Hikdish shlosha ilanot mimata asara lebeit za'ah. The person is makdish three trees, where their distribution is in such a manner that you could then place 10 of them inside the area of a beit za'ah. Harizeh higdish et akarka ve'et ha'ilanot shebeneihem. That individual is not only makdish the trees, but also the land that is between them. Because the trees have a certain amount of land around them, which are considered to be essential to the growth of the trees, if you're makdish three trees, and they are distributed in such a manner, this is the Gemara in Bava Batra, spends a lot of time on this, what's the amount, what's the distance between the trees, and what is considered to be normal. Tosfot over here discusses whether that's true by Hekdesh and by Mechira, or is there a difference between them. But given that distribution, the way that Rashi explains it over here, it's, these are three trees that are distributed in a field in such a manner that you could distribute 10 in a Beit Sa'ah, then if you are makdish them, not only are you makdish the trees, but the karka, and the implications of that are not only the karka, but everything on the karka, including other smaller trees that are distributed between them. So all the land and all the smaller trees that are between them are captured by this hakdasha. The Bali Tosafot suggests that these shloshinanot, matas rel Beit Sa'ah, it's talking about nitiyot, saplings that are being planted, because if you are talking about larger trees, then all you need are three trees within a Beit Sa'ah. So Tosfot explains that these are three trees amongst 10 trees distributed in a Beit Sa'ah, and the only time you need, or you speak about 10 in a Beit Sa'ah, is when you're speaking about saplings or nitiyot. Rashi just simply describes the distribution of the three trees, but it's not necessarily speaking about nitiyot. And the girsa of the Shita Mikubetzet is higdish asara ilanot, or it's makdish 10 ilanot, because that's like what Bali HaTosafot are explaining over here, that we're speaking about nitiyot, where the distribution is 10 in a Beit Sa'ah. Given that, that's the din that we learn in the Gemara and Baba Batra. And then it continues and says, Kishu podeh, podeh Beit Zerah Chomer Sorim b'chamishim shekel kesef. Even though he was makdish the trees, and the land went with it, when he comes to redeem it, all he does is redeem the land, and the trees are included. And that includes these trees, so any other trees that are planted in between them. B'chol mikain, o yeter alkain, if the distribution is more than that, or less than that, o shik disham b'zeh azeh, or he was not makdish them simultaneously, but one after the next, azeh lo ikdish, lo et akarka, v'lo et ha'inot shebeneihem, then the land that is between them is not included. Neither are any of the other trees that are possibly planted or distributed between them. Veloot, ela afilu ikdish ilonotav. If it was makdish the trees first, v'acharkeach ikdish akarko, and then afterwards was makdish the land, kishu podeh, when he redeems them, podeh talianot bishav yehen, then he has to redeem the trees at their true value. V'chuzer podeh akarka beit zera chomer sorim b'chamishim shekel kesef. Then he has to redeem the land at its fixed value of a stay achuza. So in the situation where he's makdish them separately, then he also redeems them separately. So now, this is clearly a problem for Rav Huna, both because in the latter scenario, it tells you that when do you split up the redemption is only when you were makdish the trees and then the karka separately. But if you were simply to makdish one of them, then you wouldn't separate them out, and that's also borne out by the Reisha, where it says in a case where you makdish the trees and the karka goes with it, all you have to do is redeem the karka and everything's included. Where it says, v'chitei ma'achanami podeh, v'chuzer podeh, if in the ratio you say, you know what, when it says to redeem it, means to redeem it, the trees, and the land, and each one of them separately, having a sefer podeh, v'chuzer podeh, that can't be the case, because the latter half of the Mishnah clearly states that's the situation, where you redeem the trees and then the karka, implying that the first half of the Mishnah is not speaking about that. Mechlal d'reisha lo. So now, the Gemara here leaves this as a question and is going to answer it, although Rashi's girsa seems to have tiyufta the Rav Huna. At this point, this is a strong refutation of Rav Huna's position. The Gemara is going to try to answer it, but Rashi has this additional girsa, which we don't seem to have in our Gemara, which is tiyufta the Rav Huna. Then, Ella Hamani. So then, who is the author of this position? Rabbi Shimoni, Dama Magdish, Bain Ra Magdish. When a person's Magdish, he does it in the most miserly fashion. So what we're saying is that Rav Huna subscribes to the Tanaim that believe a person is Magdish, Bain Yafa. If that's the case, then the rules are like what he says. This Braita that we just brought is authored by Rabbi Shimon, who is of the belief, or a Tana is of the belief, that a person's Magdish, they're Magdish in the most miserly fashion. If that's the case, then not everything is broken out, or you don't give the full value to the tree is separate from the value of the karka. The Tanya, Amagdish et asadeh, Higdish et kula. Person's Magdish, a field. He's Magdish not only the field, but everything on the field. Mishon Omer, look, Dish, Ela, Charuv, Hamurkav, Mistana Shikma. Person who does that is only being Magdish, the carob tree that has been grafted, or Sadana Shikma is a sycamore that's been already cut once, now has grown back, and they cut again for its wood, and it continues to grow back. Those are very significant items on the land. And a person's Magdish, he's only Magdish, these items. So now, it's very strange that Rabbi Shimon would be saying that, because Rabbi Shimon says that you're Magdish in the most miserly fashion. If you're Magdish in the most miserly fashion, why are any of these items included in the Hakdasha that you're doing over here? Nothing should be included, according to Rabbi Shimon. And that leads to multiple explanations as to what is meant over here. Which is the first possibility is that, according to most of the Rishonim, Rabbi Shimon here is not coming to exclude other trees, but to say to you, not only are other trees, which are definitely batel to the karka, included, but even these large significant items, they're all included in this hakdasha. But Rashi over here, and I think the Rabbeinu Gershom seemingly says the same thing, think that Rabbi Shimon, when he says he's Makdisha Sadeh, he's not Ikdish what's on it or what's there. And he certainly would not be Makdisha Charuva Murkava Stanashikma because they are significant. But if he was Makdish the field and left the trees for himself, these trees are not excluded. That's because these trees need the land. And they draw the major sustenance from the land, or they're the major drawers of sustenance from the land. Therefore, they're considered to be one with the land. So, again, the other Rishonim say that all trees are included according to Rabbi Shimon. It's just everything else that's on the land that's not included. Rashi over here says that all other trees are not included in the land. These trees in particular are included because of their usage of the land, or their necessity to draw from the land. They're considered so much a part of the land because how much they draw from the land that they're also included in the Hakdasha. The Gemara Baba Batra simply says that Rabbi Shimon believes that a person's Makdish Bain Ra'ah doesn't include anything in the field. And here he's speaking in the Shita of the Chachamim. And that is that according to the Chachamim, if you say that a person is Makdish Bain Yafah, then he should only include these items because these items are considered to be significant. And therefore a part of the field, but nothing else is considered to be so significant that it's classified as being a part of the field. All right, that's the position of Rabbi Shimon. And then, based on this, you would say that Rabbi Huna subscribes to the view of the Chachamim, Ba'ayin Yafah, and Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that it's Ayin Ra'ah. And now what we're trying to say is that the Mishnah, the bright that we brought before, that seems to say that the land includes the trees, is altered by Rabbi Shimon, who says that you leave everything else with the field. You don't separate out. You don't give extra value to Hakdish. Where it says, okay, but that may not work so well because the Rabbi Shimon lezel batar pidyon belifrugu agavarayu. If you're following Rabbi Shimon's shita, Rabbi Shimon has a shita that it doesn't matter how things became Hakdish. Once they're all Hakdish, you can redeem them as a single unit. Dahasha minan le Rabbi Shimon dazal batar pidyon. We have evidence of the fact that Rabbi Shimon follows the redemptive process and not the time of Hakdasha, which is the Tanya. Minayin lokeach sadeh me'aviv. Person who purchases a field from his father. Ve'ikdisha. And then he's makdishit. So when he purchases it from his father, he is a leaseholder in the field. It's a stei mikna. Because he purchased it from his father, he's not the owner in an inheritance of the field at this point in time. But that changes now. Ve'achar kach me'taviv. Father dies now. Minayin shetei lefanav kistei achuza. How do you know that you should treat it like a stei achuza now when it comes to the redemption of the field from Ekdesh, if he wants to buy it back from Ekdesh? Tamalomar im et stei miknato asher lo mistei achuzato. Stei miknato is only something that is not a stei achuza. Sadeh shein ruya liot stei achuza. It has to be a field that's not possible or probable to reach or become a stei achuza. Yatzdazo. This field is excluded because it was ra'oi to become a stei achuza, and therefore it's now included in the world of stei achuza, not a stei mikna. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbi Shimon. That's the view of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. What you see here is, even though at the time that he was makdish it was a stei mikna, so therefore it should have to be redeemed at its full value, Nevertheless, when it came to the period of time when he comes to redeem it, at that point it was already a steachuza, and therefore we treat it like a steachuza. According to Rabbi Shimon, you see that you follow the point of redemption and not the point of akdasha. That means in the Mishnah, you're claiming now is authored by Rabbi Shimon. The Seifa says over there, if you were makdish the trees, and then separately makdish the karka, when it comes to redeem them, you have to redeem them separately. According to Rabbi Shimon, if you makdish the trees and the karka, when you come to redeem them, they should be viewed as a single unit now. You should be able to redeem the karka, beit zera, chomer, seorim, bechamishim shekel. That should take care of everything. So why does that braita say that you separate out and you redeem the trees separately from the land? According to Rabbi Shimon, you should put them together. Rabbi Meir Omer, minayin lelokeach sdei me'aviv umet aviv. Person purchases a field from his father, and then his father passes away. Ve'achar kach hikdisha, and then only afterwards does he makdish it. Minayin shdei lefanav kistei achuza. How do I know that that's treated like a stei achuza? Tamal Omer, I come to tell you that only a field that's not a stei achuza, but if it is a stei achuza, then it's not included in the world of stei miknato. So Rabbi Meir darshins the pasuk slightly differently and gives you a lesser chiddush. He argues on Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, and he believes that when you have a stei mikna that is purchased by a child, if he was makdishit then, and then his father passed away, he would have to redeem it as a stei mikna, because he makdisha at the time that it was a stei mikna, before it became a stei achuza. On the other hand, if he purchased it from his father, then his father passed away, and it became a stei achuza, at this point, if he's makdisha, then it has the status of a stei achuza. That's Rabbi Meir's view here, which is a lesser chiddush than what Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda are saying, which is that even if he was makdisha while it was a stei mikna, and then only afterwards did his father pass away, he still only redeems it as a stei achuza. But again, according to Rabbi Shimon, you should have consolidated the trees and the field in the braita that were claiming that he would have authored in order to avoid it being a problem for Rabbi Yehuda. Ilu the Rabbi Yehuda or the Rabbi Shimon, afilo hikdisha v'achar kach meitav. And according to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, even if you makdish it and then the father passes away, steachuzavya, it's considered a steachuza. My taima. What's the reasoning for their position? E mishum kra. If you say that's a gzerat katuv, they learn it out of the pasuk. Kra, look at the Rabbi Meir who da'ato. The pasuk can teach you what Rabbi Meir says. Now, Rashi just says that either drasha is equally plausible here, and how do they know that their drasha is better than Rabbi Meir's drasha? Although the Rabbeinu Gershom goes one step further and says the Rabbi Meir's drasha is more logical and makes more sense. So then, if you have a choice, you would pick Rabbi Meir as the drasha over here. Elam mishum dazal batar pidyon. Must be the reasoning behind their position is that you follow the time of redemption and you look at the situation then, not at the time of Akdasha. So Amar Rav Nachman, Rav Yitzhak, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Kra, Ashkochu, V'darush. It's not true. They found a pasuk and that's what compelled them over here. Im kein lichtov rachmana, if the Rabbi Meir's drasha is true, then the pasuk should have been phrased differently, which is, V'im et stei miknato, ashelum stei achuzato, yakdish l'ashem. That's the way we have the pasuk now. What they say is, im kein lechtov rachmana, im et stei miknato, asher lo achuzato. You could have skipped the word sadeh in the second part of the pasuk. You already know that we're speaking about a sadeh because that's how the pasuk began. Im et stei miknato, asher lo me achuzato would have given you the same information as saying asher lo miste achuzato. My miste. So why is there an extra misadeh there? Sadeh shein ruya liot sadeh achuza. That's what it comes to teach you. It's not simply that it's not an achuza. It's a field that can't not become an achuza. And over here, that's what we're speaking about. It's a field that, when it was a stei mikna, could become an achuza if his father passed away. And that's what takes it out of the world of stei mikna if his father does pass away. So that's why they had an extra word of sadeh there that makes them learn this way and tells them to learn their way and not Rabbi Meir's way. And so it's a pasuk that's doing that. If it is a pasuk that's doing that, then you don't have any proof that Rabbi Shimon believes we go butter pigeon. And if that's the case, then the break that we said before could be authored by Rabbi Shimon because he says that a person is makdish ba'ayin ra'ah. And we have no evidence of the fact that he believes that you consolidate things when it reaches the pigeon situation. And so therefore, that could be Rav Huna's defense of his position that Rabbi Shimon's the author of that braita, which is problematic for his position that a makdish ba'ayin yafa, which should have said that the ilanot and the sadeh should have been separate, even in the ratio. Right now the Gemara continues, Amar Papa, Higdish, Trashin. If a person is Magdish, a Trashin means a low quality property that is not usually fertile or ready to be used, to be planted on. It's actually used by Chazal. Rashi quotes this in Parshat Shlach with regards to Hebron, and it says that it's Trashin Shebe Eretz Yisrael, which means kind of the garbage dump or the worst land of Eretz Yisrael. But the truth is that if you know the area or the topography of the area, it means an area that is very full of stones. And therefore, it's difficult to plant or to use it for farming because there's so many stones on the land that makes it almost impossible to plant. And you can even see that in the areas around the Hebron, in those areas of the Har Yehuda. You see, in order to plant the fields, you have to clear the stones and they have to do a bunch of work, and you see all the stones piled up around it. That's what it means, a trashin. If he was Makdisha trashin, podan be shovyan. When you go to redeem it, you have to redeem it at its full value. My taima. What's the reason? Because when it comes to a steachuza, the way that you redeem it is if it is zera amar rachmana. If it is a field that is a productive field, these aren't fields that you can plant. These aren't productive fields. Therefore, it doesn't have the din of a steachuza to be redeemed at beit zera chomer sorim v'chamishim shekel kesef. Lo galan, if he does not redeem them, then yotzim biyovel. My taima, sadeh amar rachmana koldu. When it comes to the gula of the sadeh or the chazara in the sadeh, that happens to be affected by the yovel. Because there it doesn't specify Beit Zera. Over there it just uses the word Sadeh. And that's what it says in the Pasuk. V'aya Sadeh b'tzeito b'yovel, kodesh l'Hashem, k'steacherem l'koein t'yachuzato. Now the rule of a steachuza, if it is not redeemed, then when it comes to the yovel, it goes to the Kohanim at the time of the yovel. And so that it then will apply, because the Pasuk over there just says V'aya Sadeh b'tzeito, and it just uses the word Sadeh, without any modification or qualification of being Zera or Beit Zera, and that's why the din will be bifurcated with regards to Steachuza. It'll have some dinim like a Steachuza, but not all the dinim like a Steachuza. So now, Machar Trashin. Instead of being Magdishit, he sold a piece of property that's Trashin. Nigalim Pachot Mishtei Shanim. You don't have to wait the requisite 2 years before you redeem it. We're going to see this later on in the Masechta, but when it comes to selling of a field to another party, which will come back to you in the Yovel, you cannot redeem it before the Yovel unless you've given him 2 years on the field. And that's because it says over there, my taima, mispar shnei tvuot amar chvano. That you have to give him shnei tvuot, you have to give him 2 productive years or 2 harvest years before you redeem it. Otherwise, it's really hard for someone to buy the property. Even though they're leasing the property, they want to know they're at least going to get some time with the property before you can come and take it back. So there is a minimum time period of 2 years that it's in the hand of the buyer where the seller cannot redeem it. That only applies, as the Gemara is saying over here, to Bnei Tvuot. Hayla Bnei Tvuaninu. But this Trashim is not a productive field or an area that they're going to plant. Since it doesn't have Tvuot, it's not subject to the 2 year requirement to leave it in the hands of the buyer, and you can redeem it immediately. Lo Galan, if he does not redeem it from the buyer, Choseret the Balim Biovel. It still comes back to the Balim and the Ovel. My tama, because it says v'shav l'achuzato amar rachmana. Comes to the Yovel, it says you return to your possession. V'haynami achuzahu, and this is also his possession, and therefore he has a right to return to it or have it come back to him. So again, the din will be bifurcated. It'll have the din of Yovel that'll come back to him when he sells it, but it will not have the minimum requirement of leaving it in the hands of the buyer for 2 years. Hikdish ilanot, if he's makdish trees, podeh b'shov yehen. You have to redeem them at their true value. My taima, because the pasuk says beit zera amar rachmana velo ilanot, speaking about grains and not trees. Lo ga'alan, if he did not redeem them, en yotzim lekohanim biyovel, then it doesn't go out to the kohanim on the yovel, because it says there vaya hasadeh amar rachmana velo ilanot. It's the field and not the trees. So the field goes to the kohanim at the yovel. The trees don't go to the kohanim at the yovel. So normally, in such a case, when the yovel comes around, the property, if not redeemed by the baalim or sold to a third party, would then go out to the kohanim. But in this case, the baalim will retain the right to redeem it even post the yovel. And if the gezbar already sold it to a third party, it won't go out to the kohanim in the yovel. Now, this at this point is a trees that he's being makdish, but not the karka that's associated with them. Because otherwise, we already saw before in the previous amud that it says there that a steilan is included in the din of steachuza. That's only a case where it is a state ilan that you were makdish. Over here, you were makdish the ilanot, but you did not makdish the karko or the state ilanot. And that's why the din over here is speaking to the trees, particularly, and not to a state ilan. Machar ilanot, enagalim pachot mishte shanim. He sold the trees to an individual. You can't redeem them within the first 2 years after the sale. Might die him up, because the pasuk says, shnei tevuot amarachmana, v'ani b'nei tevuot nino. It says you have to leave it for a minimum of 2 harvests or 2 cycles with the buyer. And these trees have productive cycles or harvests, and therefore they have to remain with the buyer for a minimum of 2 years. Lo ago alam, if he didn't redeem them, ein chozerot the balim b'yovel. They don't come back to the owner in the yovel. My taima, b'shav l'achuzato amarachmana. Yovel brings you back to your possession, to your achuza, v'lo ilanot. And not trees. Trees are not considered to be an achuza. Land is an achuza. Trees are not an achuza. Therefore, they're not subject to the yovel. Amar wants to understand this. Higdish ilanot, pode bishovyan. If you magdish the ilanot, you have to redeem them at their value. Amai. Why is that the case? V'likdishu agav arayu, v'lifriku agav arayu. Once you're magdish the trees should carry the land with them. If they carry land with them, you should be able to redeem them with the land. And you should use the land as the value. And that value then should cover the trees as well. And also facilitate the ability for them to come back during the Yovel, because there's land associated here. As I explained before, you have to say that we're speaking about a case where he was makdish the trees and not the land. Otherwise, none of this makes sense. Christ says you can't say that. Because dikla, the chavre, a person who sells a palm tree to his friend, you acquire not only the tree itself, but you acquire the tree and all the land that is immediately below the tree. Mishipula, from the base of the tree, atahoma, until the depths of the earth. There is land that's associated. It may not be land around the tree, but the land directly under the tree definitely belongs to you at that point. The lav mit itmar Allah. But then we already say over here, bevav machmatana, the case where he comes with a claim. And as Rashi over here says, shetono shizkolo shem karka. Didn't the Gemara there in Baba Batra say that the situation is a case where he's making a claim not only for the tree, but for the land? This is a case of a chazaka. We know that in Baba Batra, in order to establish a chazaka, you need 3 years. So he's been on the land for 3 years, and he says, you sold me the trees, and it has to be a case where he said he sold me the trees and you sold me the land. So that's not a proof to our case over here, because over there he made a specific claim that the land was sold to him. That doesn't mean in a default case that the land comes along. It happens to be in that case that he made a claim for the tree and the land. He said, you sold me the tree, you sold me the land, I've been here for 3 years, and now you can't throw me off, even though I don't have a shtar because I have a claim and I have 3 years of chazaka. But the Gemara is clear that his claim has to include the karka. Can't be that just includes the tree. It's a case here where it includes the karka, and that's why the karka is included underneath the tree. But that doesn't mean in a default scenario that the karka would be included. And therefore, that would be the explanation of that case before, is that he's makdish the trees without the karka, or he sold the trees without the karka. And therefore, the trees are looked at independently of the karka. Sadeh mikna notein shovyo. When it comes to a sadeh mikna, then you pay its full value. That's the view of the Chachamim in our Mishnah. Tanur Banan. We bring a brayto to explain the difference in opinion between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer. So it says, b'michsat, that's found in the psukim by the Ste Achuza, which is the description of the quote-unquote value that you're going to have to provide by a Ste Mikna, which is imet Ste Miknato, asher lo miste achuzuto yakdish l'Hashem, v'chishev lo hakohen et michsat hayarkecha, the Ste Mikna is not yours. It's going back to the owner in the Yovel. So the value that you have to find here is how much is the leasehold and the property worth until the Yovel. And that's what you have to pay. That's the Shovyo that you have to pay. So in describing what you have to pay, it says over there, 2 words that are going to be important. One of which is, V'chishev, lo hakohen, et michsat, hayarkecha. So now they're playing on the word michsat. Ma tamad lomar. What does michsat come to teach you? The fish in Namar, because it says by a ste achuza, zera chomer sorim v'chamishim shekel kesef, yochol af ste mikna kain. You would think, just like a ste achuza is redeemed at that fixed rate, that fixed value, so too a stay mikna would be redeemed at a fixed value. Tamalomar miksat. And miksat comes to teach you the value of, or the true value of the item. That word miksat is an indication that there's a different type of valuation that's used here by the stay mikna, which is shovyo. And that's what the word miksat means over here. Lez omer, nemarkan v'chishev, says over here, as we noted before, the word chishev. Nera lahalan v'chishev. And it says also, by steachuza v'chishev. The word v'chishev is used in both cases. And therefore, he creates a gzeira shova between stay mikna and stay achuza. Stay mikna, we read the pasuk v'chishev lo akoeni miksat erek achad shnat yovel. Tanei dekha b'yom ahu kodesh la'ashem. And when it comes to a stay achuza, it says, v'imachar yovel yakdish sadeu. V'chishev lo akoeni te kesef al pi ashanim anotarot. So over there you see the word v'chishev is used both by a stei achuza and a stei mikna. Malahalan davar katzuv, just like by a stei achuza, it's a fixed value. Avkan davar katzuv. So to over here, it is a fixed value. Ibayulohu, berabonan, idohu gzereshava, umafkin lei lechomesh, udimalek lehu gzereshava. So now, the Gemara understands there's a difference between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is clearly that a stei mikna is redeemed at the same way as stei achuza, at the fixed value of bet zerach chomer se'orim for 50 shekel kesef. That's true of a stei achuza, stei mikna, because of the gzer shava of chishev chishev. The Chachamim disagree and say that a stei achuza is at the fixed value, but a stei mikna is michsat, is at its true value. But do the Chachamim still subscribe to the Gzeir Shavah of Rabbi Eliezer? And the Nafkamina will be the issue of a Chomesh, whether you add on an extra fifth. Because by Stei Mikna, it never mentions the issue of an extra Chomesh. Whereas by the case of the Stei Achuza, it says over there, Vim Gaoli Galet Asadeh, Ha Magdishoto, the one who was Magdishit, V'yasaf Chamishit Kesever Kachala, become low. If that on an additional fifth. So maybe they don't use the Gzeir Shavah the way that Rabbi Lazar does it, but maybe they do subscribe to it, and therefore they subscribe to it, and they would add on a Chomesh. Or maybe, Leitlu Gzeir Shavah, Leitlu Chomesh. And therefore they would think that a Stei Mikna does not have a Din of Chomesh, and if the one who was Magdish it deems it, there would be no addition of a Chomesh. Amarova, Mistavra, Leitlu Gzeir Shavah. Makes sense that they don't have the Gzeir Shavah. Midigali Rachman, a Chomesh. Because the Torah specifies a chomesh by a stei achuza, v'gabe makdish beito, and also by the case of makdish beito. So by stei achuza, we already read the pasuk. In that same parshia, in parsha bechukotai, it says that when you makdish your house, it says, v'yama makdish yigalet beito, v'yasav chamishit kesev erkechala v'yalo. So also there you have a chomesh. So havelei shnei ktuvim abayim kechad. It's two psukim that are coming to teach you the same din. Chol shnei ktuvim abayim kechad. Eim lamdim. And whenever you have two psukim that come together to teach you the same thing, the Eim lamdim, spoke about this numerous times, the Torah tries to conserve, and therefore if it wants to teach you a din, it will teach you the din in one area of halacha, and then you will be extrapolate that to other areas of halacha. In other words, it's a binyanav, becomes a paradigmatic situation, and then you learn from that to the other situation. So that the Torah would do if it wants you to learn it to other areas. If the Torah then gives you the information in one area, and then gives you again in another area, what it's coming to tell you is that those are the exceptions to the rule and not the rule anymore. And that's what he's pointing out. The fact that it added a chomesh by Beito and a chomesh by Stei Achuza, that shows you that you have two psukim teaching the same thing. Two psukim telling the same thing means that they're an exception to the rule and not the rule. And according to the one who says that even when you have two, it's not considered an exception until you have three. The Goli Rachman a chomesh b'maser be'ema tehora u'be'ema t'me'a. So the Chomesh is also mentioned by the Behema Tmeya and by the Behema Tehora. So for instance, Makdish Behema, that is not Roi Yilim Izbeach Berek Abayit, it says in Behema Tmeya Upadar Berek Kecha V'yosaf Chomishito Alav V'yemigel Nirker Berek Kecha. And by Maaser it says Vim Gaol Yigael Ish Mimasro Chomishito Yosef Alav. Then in addition, there are other times in this Parshia, like including the Behema, that was Nikdash Yilim Izbeach. And guys, the moment it, there's also a pasuk like that. So you have another two cases where it mentions it. Now you have plenty of areas where it's mentioning it, and that means that it is definitely the exception to the rule. And you can't learn from them. The Gemara says, Tanya Kavote de Rava. We have a braita that supports Rava's contention here that the Chachamim are not Doresh, the Gzeres Shavah for Chomesh, but not because of his reason. He says the reason they're not Doresh it is because of this issue of Shnei Ketuvim Abayim Kechad. The braita on the other hand gives a difference, which is Tanya, Bimichsa Ter Kecha. That's the way the Chachamim learned that you redeem it at its value. Hikishu HaKatuv L'Arachin. The Torah connects it to Arachin. Marachim ein mosif chomesh, avstei mikna ein mosif chomesh. The fact that it says michsat erkecha is a term that's also used in the parsha of arachin. And just like by arachin, there's no addition of a chomesh when you give erech of yourself or someone else. In the Mikdash, there's no vayosef chomishato alav. Just like there is no chomesh, so do by stei mikna, there is no chomesh. So Rav is right that there is no chomesh according to the Chachamim by stei mikna, but it's not because of his reason of shnei k'duvim k'ayachad or shlosha k'duvim by m'chad, but rather because of the gzeres shavah, in a sense, to arachin, that tell you just like arachin doesn't have a chomesh, so do stei mikna does not have a chomesh. Tosfot over here says that he's not sure why shnei k'duvim abayim k'ayachad are relevant to the issue of the gzeres shavah. Kashal Rabbeinu Elchanan, Amaylo Neneif, Minhon Gzer Shava. Nehid Binyan Av, Lo Yofina Minayu. Yikomakom Gzer Shava, Nelef Minayu. Just because you can't learn a Binyan Av from these dinim, because of the fact that there's more than one of them written, that doesn't mean you can't learn a Gzer Shava from them. And, Gabi Magdisha Beito, Umatzina and the Melef, Chad Michavrei, Gzer Shava. It's not a problem. So why is it that over here, since you wrote them separately, that you can't learn from them? He says, because over here, since we could have learned one from the other, Gzer Shova, had it just written it by Steachuza, we could have learned too Beito. The fact that it went out of its way to write it by Beito after you could have learned it from Steachuza, that shows you that they're coming to tell you, you can't learn from this at all. It's one thing if it's just something you can't learn a binyan out from, and then you try to learn Gzer Shova. But over here, where the psukim specifically could have not repeated the halacha, because you could have learned one from the other, gzer shava, and then they go out of their way to do it. Once it does that, it's coming to preclude not only a binyan av, but even a gzer shava. And that's why he says over here, the Gemara is saying that this possibly would preclude a gzer shava by the mere fact that it was repeated the halacha, not because it's repeated, but because it's repeated unnecessarily. That already precludes the ability not only to learn a binyan av, but also to learn a gzer shava. Now the Mishnah continues with the next case, which is Bishur Muad. Shemita Tevet, Bishur Muad that kills an Evet Kedani, Lakelu Lachmir. Ketzat. Again, what's the scenario? Echad Shemit et Ana'a Sheba Avadim. He killed the nicest or the best of the Evet Kedanim, Beta Kor Sheba Avadim. Or he killed even the lowliest, or the worst, or the ugliest of the Evet Kedanim, Notim Shloshim Sela. You pay the fixed rate that the Torah says, Shloshim Sela. When you're talking about the best Evid Kanani, that's a Kula. You're talking about the lowliest of the Evid Kanani, that is a Chumra. Hamid Ben Chorin, on the other hand, if a Shur Muad kills a Ben Chorin, Notain Shovyo. Then you have to pay the value of the individual that was killed. There the Torah says, V'natan Pidyon Nafsho. If you pay Pidyon, and the Gemara Baba Kama has a machloki, whether it's Demei Mazik or Demei Mizak. From this Mishnah, it seems that Demei Mizak is the value of the person that was killed. That's what you have to do in order to pay the kofar, the redemption for the death that was caused. Because you didn't personally kill him, but your possessions killed him. And so you're held accountable or liable, not in a death penalty sense, but liable in the sense that you have to pay kofar. Chaval bazeh bazeh. If, on the other hand, he didn't kill the Evet Kedani or the Ben Chorin, he just damaged them, then nezek shalem. Then you have to pay full value. That doesn't matter whether it's an Evet Kedani or a person. By chabalah, there's no gzera to kaduv, there's no knas. You pay the value of the damage that is done. Where it says, bimuad in bitamlo. Mishnah here is speaking about a case of muad and not tam. Now, obviously, by the case of killing, it's only relevant by the muad, because both the kofar that's paid and the shloshim she'el evit are only paid in a case of muad. But rather, the diuk is out of the latter part of the Mishnah of chavala. But where you do damage, it seems to say over here that only a muad that does damage are you chayav to pay nezek shalem, but a tam that does damage to a person doesn't pay nezek shalem. Lema matitin de lo Rabbi Akiva. It sounds like our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Akiva. It's not because we have the Mishnah in Baba Kama that says, Rabbi Kiva Omer, Af Tam Shechaval Ba'adam Shalem B'motar Nezek Shalem, that a Tam that injures an individual has to pay Nezek Shalem. The Chatzi Nezek of Tam is relevant when it damages another animal, but not when it does damage to a person. And then when it does damage to a person, you have to pay Nezek Shalem. So he doesn't have the distinction between Mu'ad and Tam. And our Mishnah seems to indicate that the din of Nezek Shalem by Chavala only applies by a Mu'ad. Mar says, Afilu Tamer Rabbi Akiva, even Rabbi Akiva can be the author of Mishnah, who adin da Afilu Tam Nami. Even a Tam also would pay Nezek Shalem. V'adi the koboy l'mitna seifa, emit eved, emit ben chorim. Because in the seifa, I mean the seifa of the Reisha, it had to write that he killed an eved, or he killed a ben chorim. The memu'adu mishkachat lei. There, it's only true by a mu'ad, even according to Rabbi Akiva, betam lo mishkachat la. You couldn't explain the case of Tam, shemachik tani mu'ad. So I wrote mu'ad because the earlier cases of the Mishnah over here have to have mu'ad, because that's the only time that the shloshim shel eved is relevant. The only time that pidyon of the shovi of the person that was killed is relevant is when it was a mu'ad that killed. But the latter half of the Mishnah, maybe it could apply to a Tam. But just because the first half needed to be mu'ad, it mentioned mu'ad there, but not to say that it qualifies the part of chavala. Maybe by chavala, even a Tam would be chayav. And then you could fit Rabbi Kiva into this Mishnah as well. Okay, next Mishnah. Ba'uneis u'mefateh la'kel u'lachmir. Comes known as a rapist or a case of seduction where the person has to pay 50 shekel kesef to the father of the girl. Ketzad, what's the scenario? Echad shanas u'pita et gdula shebikuna. This is what we mentioned before. When they were contrasting the two different people, doesn't matter whether he raped or seduced the highest of Yichus and Klal Yisrael, that it was a Bat Kohen, or the Bat of the Kohen Gadol, Vatak Tanash Yisrael, doesn't matter if it's the lowliest amongst Klal Yisrael, Tain Chamishim Slaim, he pays 50 shekel kesef, Baboshet, Vapagam, Akol Lefiyam Vayesh, Vamitbayesh. When it comes to the Pagam, is really not included in this, but it comes to Busha, Busha is a subjective issue, and therefore it all has to do with the person that caused the Busha, as well as the person who has been mitvayesh, the person who is the object of the action over here. So when it comes to the object of the action, obviously someone who's of a higher stature, the busha is greater than someone who's of a lower stature. When it comes to the perpetrator of the crime, there the Rishonim disagree as to which is worse, whether it's a lowly person that is more mivuyash if they did it, or if it's a higher person that does it, that it's more mivuyash. But either way, there's a certain amount of subjectivity, and there, the valuations would change depending on the person. So the 50 shekel is a fixed rate no matter who the person is. The pagam, the Gemara Ketubot tells us, is the difference of the value of an individual who would be sold on the market. For instance, a shifcha knanit, who's a betula, versus a shifcha knanit, that is a bi'ula. What would be the difference in value? The truth is, it shouldn't make a difference, except for the fact that he might marry that shifcha knanit, who's eved ivri. So depending, would he pay a little more to make his eved ivri happy to get a betula? So that would be the difference in terms of what pagam, or the value of pagam, is. The 50 shekel is the mohar of betulot. And then the busha is the embarrassment that's caused over here. Gemara says about this, Amai, why is it that you're paying over here not only for the 50 shekel kesef, but you're also paying for these other items? Why do you have to pay some subjective value rather than just a fixed value? Like all the other cases in the Mishnah before, there was a fixed value no matter whether it was the higher level or the lower level. That's the whole idea of la'akel u'lachmir. So why isn't that the totality of the payment over here? Why are you including a payment for boshet as well? Ema, chamishim slaim amar rachmana, mikol milei. Torah says you pay 50 shekel, and that's it. So why should you have to pay any more? Amar Rav Zeira, yomru baal bat milachim chamishim, baal bat hejotot chamishim. How could it be that if he raped or seduced a princess, or he raped or seduced a regular layperson, that you pay 50? That doesn't make any sense. Why should it be the same value? So I'm really Abaye says that's the whole point of these Mishnayot over here. Ihochi gabi eved nami. Why don't you say the same thing by the eved knani that was killed by the shor muad? Yomru eved nokev megargliot shloshim. You're going to tell me that a diamond cutter eved, you only pay 30 shekel for it. And eved osem maaseh machat, or a eved that does stitching or weaving, shloshim, it's the same value. Obviously, they have different values, but that's the whole point. The shloshim shekel is a fixed value, irrespective or independent of their values. So say the same thing over here. Why isn't the rate payment just 50 shekel kesef? Doesn't matter whether it's a bat hejotot or it's a bat milachim. Elamra Bzira, Elamai. What are you going to say? Baimalev Shnaim. Two people raped or seduced a woman. Echad Shaloka Darka. The first one did it without ruining her Betulim. Did it Shaloka Darka. Echad Kedarka. And the second one did it Darka. And that was both their Betulim. And in that case, both of them are Chayav for the 50 shekel kesef. The first one because he raped or seduced a Betula. The second one, because the Betulim are still intact, and therefore there's also a problem, because he's ruining her Betulim in the second case. So now, Yomru, Baal Bekuma Chamishim, Baal Shleima Chamishim. How could it be that in this case, the way Rashi compares it, it's the second individual over here, who is Boel, the woman, when she's already a Bekuma, she's been raped or seduced already before, and now he comes and he rapes and seduces, he pays 50. The reason you need that person, Shaloka Darka, beforehand, is so that the second person can be Chayav, because she dying has betulim, but he's being boel a pguma, and yet he's paying the same 50 shekel as someone else who raped a woman who didn't have that pguma or that pgam. How could that be? That's the way Rashi learns it. The Bai Tosfot bring from the Ri says the comparison is between the first individual and the second individual over here. The first individual was boel, the woman shaloka darka, but she was a betula at that time and not a pguma. He pays 50. Yet the second individual was raping or seducing a woman who's already pguma. Even though her betulim are still intact, he also pays 50 shekel, and the comparison is between them. Bali Tosfot claim Rashi didn't explain it that way, because he believes that if you're boel shaloka darka, there's no din of kenas, which is problematic in other gemarot, which the Bali Tosfot point out. Others say that that's not why Rashi did it, but rather, Rashi didn't use the way of the Ri, because he was trying to create a greater contrast. The contrast between the number two guy here and a normal case of rape, there still is a differential, and given that differential, there should have been a difference in the 50 shekel, and that's a more stark contrast than between the first and second guy over here. So even though Abai already pointed out that we don't make distinctions between different types of avadim, and so too, it should be true by the different types of women, nevertheless, that's with regards to the status of the woman. But we do know the Torah differentiates between a woman who is nifgama and shalom nifgama, because the din here is only true by a betula. A woman that's not a betula, the din is not the same. So you see that the Torah does differentiate between pguma and ein pguma, and therefore over here you should say there's a difference between the chamishim shekel for a pguma and a not pguma. So how could it be that they have the same din? That's the claim of Rav Zira. And the Abaye comes along and says that's not true either. Amar le Abaye, yochi gabi eved nami. You can make the same comparison by an eved. Yomu eved bari shloshim, eved mukashchin shloshim. How could you say that an Eved that's totally healthy and in good standing is 30, and a Mukashchin is also Shloshim? Because even by an Eved, there is such a distinction between a Pguma and an Enugma, and yet we see there's no valuation differential between them. It's Shloshim Shekel no matter what. And so Dovir, it should be Chamishim Shekel no matter what. El Amar Abaye, this is the reason. It's nothing to do with this logic that you can't have differentials in status and still pay the same amount. That's the whole point of this parak. Rather, it's Gzeirat HaKatuv. Amar Kra, Tachat Asher Ina. When it comes to rape, the 50 shekel are paid for the inui. That means that there are other things besides the inui that you're going to pay for. Mechal Deika Boshet Begam. That's only for the inui, but there are other things you have to pay for, like Boshet Begam. Rava Amar Damar Kra, he learns a similar type limud, but from a different part of the pasuk. Says, V'natana Isha Shochev Ima, Hanat Shchiva Chamishim. The pleasure or the joy that comes from the shchiva, that's what he's paying the 50 shekel for. Chaldeika milta achrite. There are other things that he's got to pay for. Am I new? And what are those? Boshet begam. So that's why the boshet begam are broken out from this fixed payment. The fixed payment deals with the shchiva or the hanat shchiva or the inui. That's what it covers. But there are other items that it needs to cover, which are the boshet and begam. And those aren't included in those items. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Tetvav Amud Aleph.